Listen up, class. April 4th, 1357, Castlegard, France. The English army in the nice red uniforms occupied the village of Castlegard. The French, meanwhile, were advancing, trying to drive them out of there in this direction, over the river, past the monastery, and up and over to the heights here. Just leave it, Chris. That's fine, before you wreck the place.
There's one thing worse than dying here, and that's living here. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Everybody, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 191. 191, perilously close to 200. My name is Scott Johnson, and I'm joined today by Brian. Please tell me you have a backup planned on the way.
Do we look like quantum wormhole specialist or fax machine repairman?
Really short. Yeah. You're right. You weren't lying to us about how short that was. Also with us, Randy, they killed Francois. You bastards! Jordan.
Aloha, Brian, Scott, Brian. In preparation for this week's film sack, I asked our good friend Patrick Beja to go back in time with me to the 14th century France to be my interpreter, since I don't speak French, despite the fact that he adamantly did not want to be faxed back in time and was physically resisting being placed into the painmaker machine. I completely ignored all that and beamed us right into an English encampment. My bad. Why didn't I think to take, oh, I don't know, some body armor or a book on stepping to the side when a sword is coming at you really slowly? That's irrelevant. The main lesson we learned from Patrick's stupidly predictable death is, why would anyone just get into a machine just because Professor Lupin asked them to?
Right. Well, he's a wizard. Well, he's a werewolf, I guess.
He's a wizard.
Wizard wolf. Shapeshifter wizard wolf. Finally with this, Brian, I sure hope Professor Lupin can fix the time machine on time, Ibbot.
Wow, look at that connection right there.
Yeah.
All right, so I've narrowed it down to how to make a movie based on a Michael Crichton book. All right, first off, you need wide-eyed wonder, like Laura Dern discovering that Triceratops puking in the forest. It's so cool. Then you need action and adventure, you know, like Michael Douglas and Demi Moore chasing each other around the office building in Disclosure.
Oh, yeah.
Third, you need science.
Yes.
Definite question mark on the end of that one.
Yeah.
Science is what they blinded us with in this film.
Yeah, right. Now let's go ahead and get it out of the way. Is it Crichton? Crichton?
Crichton?
Crichton?
Crichton?
Crichton.
Crichton.
Crichton. Crichton.
All right. All right.
Who's no longer with us, sadly. Had a great mind for the books he wrote.
He was a
doctor.
Did something
really peculiar as a writer, which is take two things and mash them together and do an intense amount of research on them. So like Disclosure is about affairs. It's like a fair story, but it's combined with a lot of information about Japanese business.
Yeah.
Right?
Corporate sexual espionage. Harassment and virtual reality.
Yeah, pretty much. I would say Jurassic Park is about dinosaurs and this little Spanish lawyer in shorts getting bitten off a toilet.
Did that actually happen in the book? I don't think so.
I think it did. The book. No, but I'm sure glad
the lawyer died. But I don't think he died that way.
No. He didn't have the outhouse ripped off and then bitten off the toilet. Well, what a horrible death the guy
Best
in a much
ever.
Better film had. Timeline, I'm going to tell you just right now, right off the top of this thing, before we let Fletcher explain what the hell the movie is. It's the worst Crichton adaptation. I don't care how bad you think Congo is. I don't care.
I'm gonna go with Sphere because I like the book so much. I think the book is so good and the movie is so bad.
All right, in this case, the book wasn't any better. I've read the book and I've watched the movie, and Timeline just...
Really? I've heard Timeline book is great.
I like the book. The book I thought was great.
I've heard that. I haven't read it.
Yeah.
So I can't speak to it.
But. I love the character Merrick, but otherwise it's... no.
Really?
Wait, it's like... It's Merrick.
Oh, Merrick.
That's Gerard
Butler. Leonidas, right? Mm-hmm. Got it.
Right. But the book goes on. Yeah, the book goes on forever about quantum foam and all this other, and it's like,
right,
no, it's,
and that's the thing. This is what Crichton at this point was full dead set on. Every story has to be action packed because he wanted to get a lot of money from movie makers. Right. And so this, you know, this one is a combination of him studying a ton about quantum physics, as well as a bit, not a ton, but a bit about 14th century France,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And he, so he combines those two things, and he does a pretty good job. But by this point in Crichton's career, he was flush with money, and he was just trying to churn out the next thing.
This was,
you know?
this science, let's put it this way. I believed more that it was possible to create dinosaurs than it was to make this
Yeah, this is a huge leap of faith.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know.
I would agree with that.
I like the first adaptation of this book, though, which was which had Martin Lawrence. The Black Knight.
Black
Knight's pretty good. Whatever.
I'm just adding that to our list.
Yeah.
201, episode,
you know, we almost watched Andromeda Strain. We missed out on it, but we're about, about to lay down Congo.
Coming into 2014, I was real excited because our first 3 months of Film Sack was shaping up to have three Michael Crichton adaptations. Right. And it still might. We might find something like Sphere or maybe Disclosure I mentioned.
Disclosure on there? I don't think
Was there ever a movie about Airframe?
Airframe. I forgot about that one.
Another good book, though.
I didn't read that one.
Why does that sound so boring to me? That sounds like something that your plumber forgot to bring
to
him.
So all of the post Jurassic Park movies.
I'm gonna have to charge you for a new Airframe.
Yeah, listen, I don't have one in my truck, but I could get it here Tuesday.
All of the post Jurassic Park Crichton books, like Airframe, are an attempt to insert a ton of action and mystery and intrigue and gunplay and so forth into places where you don't usually put those things.
Yeah,
and in this case, it was about the freaking team workers in a plant that makes airplanes.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's actually a good book. I've read it twice.
Wow.
I'm just thinking, God, it would be a horrible movie.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to preface anything else I say bad about him. Even his worst book is way better than I could ever even think about writing.
Oh, of course. And every author, every mainstream, like big time, this kind of author where all his, you know, he starts making a bunch of movie money.
Right.
There's always a period there where there's some slippage or there's some leaning toward, you know, leaning into the Hollywood machine.
Right.
And away from maybe your roots as a writer, but.
It got really bad for him. Michael Crichton wrote this book about nanobots. I'm forgetting the name of it.
Oh, yeah.
Next.
Was it Next? Oh, there's a Nicolas Cage movie based on that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, is that the same one?
Well, I actually like that movie.
Really? Next is really bad.
No, I don't think it is, because here's a list of all the movies or the novels that have been adapted into films. Andromeda Strain, Dealing or the Berkeley to Boston 40 Brick, Lost Bag Blues. I have no idea what that is.
I've never heard that one.
The Carrie Treatment, The Terminal Man, The First Great Train Robbery, Jurassic Park, Rising Sun, Disclosure, Congo, Lost World, Sphere, The 13th Warrior, Eaters of the Dead.
Yeah, we should see that.
And the Timeline.
Don't even say those words, Brian Dunaway, because Corinne is listening to the show and she has sent me a copy of The 13th Warrior.
Oh, really?
And we've been putting it off forever. We just need to freaking see it. But I didn't know that was a Crichton joint.
That's a Crichton joint.
Yeah, and that'll be our Andromeda Strain replacement.
Okay,
there
we go. Perfect.
It's a John McTiernan movie, Scott, and it's got Antonio Banderas, so how can we go wrong?
I like McTiernan, and I like the way you say Antonio Banderas, so I'm in.
One more time. One more time.
Yeah, one more time. Give it to us one
more time. Let's really go with Antonio Banderas.
Oh, yeah. It's like his kids are making noise in the hotel already. What?
Also, it's Scott the Fletcher.
His Swedish roots. Next is nothing to do with any of this. The movie I was thinking of, which is...
Randy's hinting that you still haven't played the Scott Fletcher intro.
Yeah, I'm going to play right now. Ready? Here it comes.
Yeah.
Right now, sit back, enjoy.
Timeline. In the near future, when a technology corporation has created a method for traveling into the past, a history professor gets trapped in 1357 France, prompting his students and son to travel back in time and face untold perils to rescue him.
Ah! Yeah, it's a little confusing, but whatever. It's more confusing in practice, to be honest, than it is on paper. And like everyone keeps telling me, the book's probably pretty good, although it sounds like Dunaway's not a fan, but generally it's thought of highly. Like the comments on IMDb are basically just constant whining that this is nothing like the book and the book is amazing.
It's nothing. It's nothing like the book. And, you know, if you're really into quantum physics, it may be your thing. But I'm telling you, like, the first chapter is pretty good. I read through the first chapter. I was like, oh, that's pretty sweet, sweet, sweet. And then he got into his explaining mode in chapter two. And I was like, oh, dear Lord.
You know what it reminds me of? This reminds me of Stephen King's, that period Stephen King had in the 80s, where all his adaptations of good books were crap adaptations. They were terrible, every single one of them.
Except for It.
And it was okay, but it was a TV miniseries.
It was a TV movie, right.
And it was all right. It had John Boy in it with the mole.
It was terrible, but it was great at it.
It was great at being terrible. So you could almost argue that was his Jurassic Park or something for the time. You know, the one thing you remembered and it was good and it was whatever. Yeah. I feel like now, though, King books, especially short stories, are amazing. They're really well done, well thought out. And we're in a period now of quality King adaptation, if you don't count that Under the Dome thing I don't like very much on TV. I think the book is good, but I don't like the show.
Right.
Point is, maybe there's a future Crichton period. He's not around to kind of control this destiny, but a period where we get nothing but incredible, thoughtful, deep adaptations of these books everyone's loves.
And there are so many movies left that people could adapt next. State of Fear, Prey, Airframe.
All bad books.
Oh, really?
Those are bad books.
I've read them all. They're all bad books.
Then they would have to be great movies.
How about Eat and Love? Is there an Eat and Love in there? No, just Pray.
But remember, there's remakes coming. I will guarantee you there will be a Jurassic Park movie in the next 10 years.
It's already in the works.
2016.
Yeah. They're already working on one.
Jurassic Park. With Spielberg coming back, I think.
Mm-hmm. Crichton Why wrote not? Twister. I don't know if you knew that. But
no.
We
wrote the movie,
The movie Twister. And
I was about to say, I didn't read a Twister book.
I can't help thinking that somebody's going to remake that movie. I don't know. It just seems rife for remaking.
I love Twister's great. It's got got Hudson and a chick from that other show on TV.
Yeah, Helen Hunt.
Helen Hunt. Yeah. And it's got it's what's his name before he had become the
Bill
dramatic
Paxton.
Who?
Paxton,
no, not him.
About?
The other, the goofy guy, but he played the big dumb blonde goofy driver guy. In
oh
this,
but
now he's Philip Seymour Hoffman. Now he's like lord of all dramatic actor men.
Exactly,
right. It's kind of funny.
He also wrote one that we watched here for FilmSec, Runaway, with Tom Selleck joint.
Did he really?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That we was talked about and directed strange it. Screenplay. Wow, what directed it? What?
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about it at the time.
I don't remember. Did we really?
I don't remember that at all.
Writer and director.
Wow.
Blocked it.
So he's the one that wrote the words, send in a floater? Was that him?
Yes.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know why I feel like a renewed interest in that terrible movie. That's great. Send in a floater. You guys remember that, right?
Oh, I remember that. Got to play this again.
I'm trying
sound.
To find it. Let's see if I still have it. No, I don't have it anymore. That one's gone.
That was a great one.
All right. Well, it's timeline. Richard Donner. So let's talk about that real quick. Richard Donner. This isn't our first FilmSec movie. Superman 2, Lethal Weapon. I don't know what else we've seen with him. I guess I could look up mostsacked.com and look real quick. Richard Donner. Here we
Richard
go.
Richard Donner of the big, huge plastic red glasses. And he is, the film I want to watch by Richard Donner that we haven't seen for FilmSec. Mm-hmm. I want to see this so bad. The Goonies.
Yeah.
I want to see Goonies with you guys.
Oh, look at this. Okay. So here are the movies he has done that we've done. And he is about to take first place in the director's most sacked.
Yes, Lady Hawk.
Lady Hawk, The Omen, Superman 2, Maverick, and Lethal Weapon 2, all by him. And now we can add to that list this, which puts him at 6 total films ahead of John Carpenter. I cannot believe this quickly we have beaten John Carpenter out of his top spot.
You know, all those movies were entertaining,
Not
this one.
And I'll tell you, I pretty much would watch any more Richard Donner films, FilmSec, offhand, like out of hand. You don't even have to ask me. Is it The Toy? Right, is it Goonies? Is it Scrooged? Is it right for FilmSec? I'm watching it because this guy.
The script series?
Yeah.
This guy at Radio Flyer. It doesn't exactly sound like a FilmSec movie, but I want to watch it with you guys.
That's the wagon one, right?
I haven't seen that one in forever. That's where he launches off the building.
Yeah, there's something about Richard Donner that's just not good. It's good. It's watchable, right?
Yeah, it's watchable, but not
entertaining.
Good. Yeah. I don't know. I felt like Lethal Weapons had an edge to it that was interesting, and I think Superman for its time was good. But my problem with Richard Donner is I feel like it just got worse the older he got. And I'm not trying to be an ageist here, but this is his second to last film.
I think I would blame this more on the writer than the director. I blame it more on Jeff McGuire than...
If we have to blame a dead guy,
Well, Donner's not dead yet. Don't put him in the grave just yet.
Right? But there's also some other dead guys associated with this movie, and we have some people to blame. We're going to spread the blame around among the corpses in this movie.
We've avoided that topic because it's very close to when
we're dancing around the Paul Walker issue, but
too soon.
It's a little bit too soon. So
he's dead too soon.
The last two movies he directed were Timeline, and the last movie he did was 16 Blocks in 2006.
I saw that. Yeah,
seems like that was a heisty kind of thing.
We gotta just cover this short distance and
Richard
the whole
Donner, Bruce Willis, Mos Def. Mm-hmm. And this was the period, I don't know if you remember this, in 2006, but all movie posters featured giant numbers with people superimposed on them.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And somebody who would eventually make the TV show Fringe was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Going to totally do that.
I will say for the record, I think Scrooged does not hold up. I watched it over Christmas. I don't think it's any good anymore.
Great.
I didn't laugh.
That was on my list.
I didn't enjoy it. I wanted to, because I remember liking it in the first place. That is, I think, the worst Bill Murray performance in everything I've ever seen. I think I like him least in this. It is phoned in and terrible. So if you think fondly on Scrooge, please go watch it again. Then tell me what you think.
Or please don't go watch it again.
Yeah, actually don't. But if you're that, I know there are going to be some fired up listeners who just heard me say that it is their Christmas classic. And I just am telling you, unless you were eight, and we'll give you a pass, because when you're eight, everything's good.
So did you guys look at all at his Richard Donner's TV history?
No.
TV directing history?
Huge.
In the 60s, he was called in to direct a few episodes of every famous TV show you've ever heard of.
Banyan, Ironside, Circle of Fear. I don't know what that is.
Hey, you know what? When you're that
The big ones.
Hold on.
Twilight Zone, Man from U.N.C.L.E., Perry Mason, Gilligan's Island.
Wild West. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Fugitive.
It just goes on and on. He was, I guess, one of the go-to TV directors for years.
The Rifleman, Have Gun, Will Travel. Oh, yeah.
So,
is that the same movie?
It kind of makes sense to me, thinking about that Timeline feels small. It feels like a small screen action movie.
Yeah, but I don't feel like Lethal Weapon did, but I feel like the other Lethal Weapons felt that way too, though. So like I feel yeah, I do. I feel like there's a TV quality to those movies, except the first one. Second one, I don't know. Lethal Weapon 3.
I didn't get that at all because I remember those being big theatrical.
When did Leo Getz enter the scene? Was that 3?
Three.
Yeah. That's when it went all the shit.
3.
Wait a minute.
Okay. Anyway, here we are. You know it's a bad movie when we're talking about everything else Richard Donner did.
Right.
So hey, this thing's got your Paul Walker, your Gerard Butler, and your Billy Connolly in it, and then a bunch of other people that you know, like Lupin, Frack, the other guy working with Lupin. You've seen him in everything.
Yes. Billy Connolly.
The
Jewish looking guy.
Yeah, glasses that was always upset about what was happening.
Right.
Was this the first time for anybody?
Yes.
For this movie?
Yes.
No, really.
Not for me.
Yeah, first time for me. How'd you feel, Brian? How'd you go with your first? Or no, you've seen it before. So how did it hold up, or did you like it the first time, or where are you at with it?
Which Brian?
The Ibbot one.
The Ibbot one. I felt like I didn't like it just as much as I didn't like it the first time I saw it.
Equal dislike both times.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was just unmemorable. It's just we talked about Badass having no potential and not doing anything with it. This one does have so much potential. It's a time travel movie with knights. You know, it's got so much potential, but it so feels like a Scooby-Doo episode where the gang splits up and then they get back together and then they split up again. And it's all just about getting back to the other people as opposed to, oh my God, how are we going to get out of here? Mm-hmm. You know?
I feel like the biggest trope of the film trope of the film is this whole use a flamethrower when a hammer will do sort of thing, where it's like, we're going to send everybody back. We're not going to explain why we're sending so many people with so many different disciplines who have no business doing this. We're just going to make it all go really, really fast. Everybody stand right here. We're going to send it. Like, no explanation thing.
Pollute the past. Polluting the crap out of it.
Right. Like, and there's a little tiny mention made, like Ethan Embry's in there being a weirdo trying to stop him. Like, hey, let's slow down. I don't like all this. And the scientists are all, no, we got to go. We're sending all these people. Yeah. And, like, they don't even really explain why they sent Billy Connolly back in the first place. There's... It's sort of a throwaway explanation. Like, he had to fix something that he did, or
we had to send him back so he'd find his glasses.
Yeah,
or nonsense like that.
Only got one lens.
It's just like it's just a weird trope to me when you're like, okay, we're all on the spaceship disaster, but what are all these people doing on it? That seventh guy is totally unnecessary.
Yeah, it was a little over the top in that regard.
And but you can even tell who's the most unnecessary because it's the first people dead within mm-hmm. seconds after they arrive in the past.
Yeah,
red shirt.
Yeah,
my bigger issue is them saying constantly to each other, "So what you're saying is," and then some additional piece of nonsense.
I think the phrase was, so wait.
So wait, you're saying like that.
So wait, what you're saying is.
Yeah.
You invented a wormhole.
Yeah, I don't like that at all. And I don't like the fact that, these things just further expose bad plot holes in a time travel movie. They're in this bum rush to get the thing fixed because mm-hmm. accidental dude with a nade came through and dropped it. And blew everybody up.
Huge trope there.
Yeah,
I mean,
that was so tropey.
Every time you go, okay, we're not taking any weapons back, there's always going to be one dickhead and he's going to bring something right. and it's going to screw everybody over.
And that's where I want to stop and say, okay, we're going to convene a committee right now and talk for 3 hours about what weapons we're going to take back, because that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah,
that you're going to send me someplace that's lethal to me and not let me, like, let's talk about how we're going to do this in a way that I survive, we don't pollute the past. Like, instead, it's just like, nope, give me that knife, go.
Right. And then to then put on this thing a timeline, like literally a timeline of, we've got to hurry, there's no time. No, you have all the time. Listen, Lupin, and you're all your idiots. You can take 5 years to rebuild your little fax machine because it's not going to matter.
Here?
Pluck them out of time. It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
What am I thinking here? I got a time machine. I get all the time in the world.
Yeah, that's all I was saying. They're always this huge rush over there. It was like an episode of 24 back at home.
And they do all this hand waving, like, well, we don't know if this wormhole is going to stay open. Well, wait. And you're going to send me back through it?
Yeah,
what? Like, that's like the whole thing. Everything about time travel, as we've discussed before, is flimsy.
Yeah.
This movie takes it and just shreds it. It's beyond flimsy.
Here's my sound effect. Here's my sound impression of the sound of the time machine. You ready? Here it is.
Yeah.
It's good. Just want to make sure you guys know, because I don't want you to think we didn't tell you everything. We've been told that this hurts a little bit, just for a second. It's just a little pain. Mm-hmm. Just want you to know, you might want to be ready for that. Mm-hmm. These people screamed for 2 minutes straight.
Yeah, they did.
They screamed before they even turned the damn thing on.
Yeah, they did. When Lupin appeared on the other side, there was actually kind of that kind of looked cool to me.
Mm-hmm.
The way it faded in and there are suddenly horses and the first thing that happens is he gets sliced.
No, it wasn't cool because every time somebody went back in time, there was always a guy riding a horse coming at you with a blade that was going to chop your head off single time.
That was interesting, right? Like, what if the wormhole had dumped them 14 miles from anybody?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and they didn't even know which direction to go because you won't let them take a compass.
I like that the first one was, we need 40 yards of clearance or whatever the hell it was.
Right.
But when they beamed in, half of them were in the river. The other half were on dry land.
Right.
Like, someone's probably embedded in a rock somewhere. We just don't know where he went. And then later they say again, we can't do it here. We don't have 40 feet of whatever space it was. But the grenade guy didn't have that either, and he got through. Mm-hmm. I don't like mumbo-jumbo stuff that they don't adhere to.
It is so much like leap of faith, hand-waving. This is why that happened. But let's move on to this.
Yeah.
Sea swords.
Yeah.
Right.
It makes you long for like a looper plot hole, you know, where that's actually an intelligent timeline plot hole, because this is just the time travel stuff became a non-issue for me. I'm just like, all right. And it's kind of interesting that the other guy, I haven't read the books, so I don't know how much this holds to the story, but the idea that there's a guy in there who's pretending to be second in command of the evil British army, who's really one of you.
Right.
He was one of the scientists who got through. Right. And not until Puke Stick and his buddy showed up did he show his true form.
Remember
that Brian from Minority Report, just making sure?
Yes, I do.
I like him. Neil McDonough, the guy's great. Anyway.
Okay, so you're jumping around really, really fast.
I really am. It's like caffeine without it. I don't know how I'm doing
So the guy that they find who's decided to go ahead and stay in that time is freaking Celeborn from The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it is.
We just saw him in XXX.
We are here to sell. Oh, yeah, he was the XXX bad guy.
Yeah.
Yep, you're right.
So that right there, the minute I saw him, I'm like, oh, bad guy.
Yeah.
And of course, in the book, you have so much more, so many more pages to explain, right? To to have this secret that we didn't tell the people going back, that we've secretly replaced one of their actual natives with a modern guy because, and all these things, you know. But in the movie, it's just like, wait, you're springing this on me right here, right now? Mm. Seriously?
Isn't Celeborn the one that showed up in the forest when the hobbits, or when Gimli and them showed up? And he took him to Galadriel, and then later, and I want to say Two Towers, he showed up with all the elves to help fight. Was that that was him?
No, Celeborn is Galadriel's boyfriend.
Yeah, but wasn't he the one that led the? I think he led those dudes to help in the second movie.
No, that's a different guy.
You sure?
I'm positive.
Damn. They all look the same to me.
I'm gonna have to look that up. I have a very strong memory of that for some reason.
But then you jumped to Neil McDonough.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, he's great. But if you ever see a person in a, if you find yourself in a story, if you ever find yourself in anything fictional and you see a guy who looks like him and who has that almost white blonde hair like him, that's a bad guy.
Like steely blue albino. Eyes. Yeah. He that's never plays guy. The good guy. Never.
So good in Justified Season 3, though. Holy crap.
And Minority Report.
Yeah. And Minority Report. He's so good, though. Everything he's in, and yes, his job is to be a bad guy. Although I think he was the Tin Man in that Oz show that
he was a good guy in the Iron Man movies as Dum Dum Dugan.
Oh, he was in the Iron Man movies.
Not the Iron Man movies. Which one was it? Captain America.
Oh, was he in that?
Yeah.
Another superhero.
Yeah, the other Marvel.
The other Avenger. Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember, but he was actually Bruce Banner in a TV Incredible Hulk for a couple of years.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really awesome.
Like doing the voice or in an animated one or like a real?
Oh, no. It was animated.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool, man. Make him be in more of those things. That's fine.
Mm. Sure.
I'm trying to look up Celeborn, and all I can find is some guy's Xbox profile, his gamer tag. I know that he's in Two Towers. I'm sure he led the charge with those. Remember the elves showed up and everyone cheered, even though it's not in the book? But he shows up with like 1,000 elves and goes, "We are here to lend a hand to the humans," or whatever. And it made King Rohan real happy. Greenbeard.
King Rohan.
King Green. I used to call him Greenbeard because his beard always looked green on that movie. Right. Anyway, the point is, I'm pretty sure that's the same elf. Somebody's got to disprove or prove this. It's driving me nuts. Anyway, back to this movie. Back to this one we're talking
back
about.
Back to the tropes. This movie was so full of tropes. I mean, okay.
Give me one.
Well, there's the tech doctor/doctor guy who doesn't trust technology, especially the type that breaks you down to a molecular level.
Yeah, you don't like that. Nobody likes that.
He's like, "I'm not going." "Why not?" "Well, because I know too much about it. And if you guys had any sense at all, you would know. Don't do it."
Yeah, that goes along with that saying. So what you're saying is part of that. People talking frantically in a room with loud, you know, while the music's at a crescendo. That's supposed to lend.
This movie was nothing but frantic talking.
Yeah, a lot of that.
The whole movie was nothing but not angry acting. But yelling acting.
Well, you'll also see there's a certain point in the clips today when we get there that there are no more clips after a certain point, and you wonder why it's so early in the film that I stopped getting clips. It isn't because I got bored of getting clips. It's because at some point there are no more clips.
You'd be forgiven.
Yeah. Right. I mean, to the movie's credit, there is an action sequence, the battle, the French against the British battle thing, where they're laying siege to this castle that actually visually has some stuff going on that's kind of cool. Trust me, it's low-level business here. We're not talking about amazing acting or anything. We're talking about big trebuchet buckets of fire slamming into sides of big giant stone walls and it looking really cool at night and arrows flying through the air and smacking into each other as they kind of cross. That stuff's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
But there's nothing else to capture is what I'm getting at. There's no more talking.
Actually, there was.
Oh, what'd I miss?
The words Greek fire, trebuchet, fax machine, markers. Mm-hmm. Say it one more time, mother effer. Because I swear that was the entire second half of the movie was nothing but them saying, Trebuchet!
Night arrows!
Which I call arrows. Give them Greek fire.
Yeah, those are Greek arrows fire. Not on fire.
Right. Night arrows.
That was just
Do we have
stupid.
Day arrows?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do those look like? Are they blue?
They're blue, so you don't see them in the sky.
Day arrows don't make you drowsy.
Yeah.
Scott,
yes.
Before we get too far away from your argument, because I want to prevent people from having to do this, I want you to click on the link to the picture that I just put in our chat.
Okay.
In Skype chat and tell me, is that the guy you're thinking about?
All right.
From the Lord of the Rings.
Oh, shit. That's not him. You're right. Okay. That's not him.
So that's a guy named Craig Parker.
Yeah.
And he played a character named Haldir that they vastly expanded in the Lord of the Rings movies.
Big time.
That's one of Celeborn and Galadriel's March Wardens.
Yeah.
And they used him to do all that stuff because he's gorgeous.
And he's a very beautiful
gorgeous
man. And he
no,
showed
he's
up.
Not. He looks like a chubby Legolas.
He does. Right.
Looks like he ate Legolas.
The horizontal and the vertical on your TV.
That's just because Orlando Bloom is so skinny.
He is so skinny. Is. But okay, so you're right. This is the guy that showed up and, you know, you have our arrows or whatever. And they,
that was Haldir.
Yeah, and they fought. And then, yeah, yeah, you're totally right. These two guys are interchangeable for me for some reason in my head. You're totally right. Well, good job to him, Haldir. But Celeborn is the other dude, and he just hung out in the forest, right?
I keep thinking you're saying Kettleborn.
Kettle corn. Kettle corn from
sure.
From the you know, the Pompanels. Come on, there's different kinds. So there's that. There's some trivia about Pierce Brosnan here. He turned down the role of Andre Merrick. He was supposed to be the Gerard Butler deal. And he pulled out at the last second.
Can I say remember watching this movie, and I went and watched it again yesterday before the show.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's Gerard Butler, because Gerard Butler was nobody
mm-hmm. right.
at
this
point.
Before 300, it was before
everything.
Rom-coms with Katherine Heigl, whose names I will never remember.
Yeah, 28 and a half dresses or something, whatever it is.
Right, how to lose a dress, 28 dresses in 10 days.
That's a pretty high average of dresses per day.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
really, you
got
to
yeah.
really put a lot of effort into yeah. that.
At some point, there's like an eighth or a quarter of a dress you have to lose,
right?
To make the math
you
work.
You want to keep the average, yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
But he is the most likable character in this movie. Merrick is the mm-hmm. most likable character
right.
in
Gerard Butler. And Billy Connolly, he's always likable. You can't not like him.
I agree.
He's funny.
Mm-hmm. I love him. He could talk to me all day.
Yeah, but you'd have to be a good distance away, because there is no doubt that when you talk to Billy Connolly, you're getting spit on constantly.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Like if you listen to that opening we played at the beginning of this show, I had to wipe off my screen.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Little spill
marks. By the way,
before
Timeline, Gerard Butler had already been in the movie I want to see for Film Sack so bad the most, which is Reign of Fire.
Oh, I love Reign of Fire.
Oh, yeah. Dragons, right? With Matthew McConaughey?
I genuinely
and
like
Christian
Reign of
Bale.
Fire. I'm all about watching that again.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, I liked it.
All right, there, Dragon's coming.
Yeah,
seriously,
the week
that goes on streaming, we're bumping something.
Didn't he shave his head? And that's mm-hmm. a McConaughey. Yeah. Man, that is a McConaughey freak show. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You want to see him before he got his Golden Globe. There's that right there. Yeah, I sign me up. I liked that. I saw it in the theater and a bunch of times since, and I'd still see it again. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's Dragons, dude. It's Dragons. It's mm-hmm. Christian Bale before Batman. It's
right. They talk about, they tell stories to kids that Star Wars, I mean.
Everybody looks like the lead from Last of Us in that game. Like they all are dressed like that guy with the same beard. And then the dragons are these dragons that don't talk. They're not, you know, sitting around going, listen here, you ever lose your car? That's not happening. These are big, angry animals. And that's fun to me. I like that take on dragons. So anyway, there you go. Jurassic Park in the sky.
All right. So we've gone all the way around the mulberry bush here, but we got to get to it. Billy Connolly, Scottish.
Yeah.
Sounds Scottish. Yeah. Very Scottish.
Right.
Gerard
accents.
Butler, Scottish.
Yeah.
Sounds Scottish.
Yeah.
Makes zero attempt to not sound Scottish.
Right.
Billy Connolly's son, the worst voice actor in history, Paul Walker, sounds like he's ordering a hot dog at the Santa Monica Pier at all times.
Listen, again, rest in peace, Paul Walker, and a horrible way to go, and all that stuff sucks. But I would just say this. I think that this is all he was really ever meant to do and good at. Now, maybe this could have refined down the road as an older actor. Perhaps he would have brought something new to the table. I don't know. In the way that, you know, Andy Griffith is more interesting when he was old than when he was younger to me and things like that. Maybe that happens. But because he didn't get that chance, I think that this was just kind of his MO. This was the kind of role he would play in Deep Blue. Was it Deep Blue? What was the one with Jessica Alba? Was it Deep Blue? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
That's the same guy.
I didn't remember anything from that movie except
Into
for
the
Jessica
Blue.
Alba's butt.
Into the Blue.
All the Fast and Furious, all these things. It's surfer blonde dude. dude, and that's it. So,
but is it possible that someone like Billy Connolly could have a child and then be separated from that child enough that that child could sound like Paul Walker?
Well, if they sent him away, maybe they didn't talk about it. Maybe they sent him away to, you know, I don't know, go to the States and study under the tutelage.
Exactly. Like, you know, split up with his mother. His mother took him back to wherever.
It was so bad.
It was. Yeah. It was interesting.
He looked, he had hair. He had the Patrick Swayze hair from Point Break.
Bang. Okay, and I've just been handed a reminder. Paul Walker is the second worst voice actor in our history behind Lou Ferrigno. I apologize for that.
Wow. So you're offending people on an all new level.
The dead and the deaf.
I'm just saying, his voice is awful.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Oh, come on. What about Keanu Reeves? Come on.
Oh, I can totally decipher Keanu Reeves in real time. Paul Walker, I spend minutes. I miss parts of the movie trying to figure out what he just said.
Really? I was excited that problem with Billy Connolly. I felt like half the movie was
Well, I mean, I don't usually play these ahead of time, but this is a conversation with his dad about Easter eggs. Okay. And this is what I think Randy's talking about, a very specific point in this conversation. It's pretty bad. Here you go.
This from a boy who hated Easter because he had to find the eggs.
Yeah, because you buried the eggs.
Because you buried the eggs.
Wow. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You because my brain is lagging, just barely understanding Billy Connolly.
So
then it kind of misses Paul Walker altogether.
Are you telling me Hollywood hires people because they're good looking and not necessarily because they can act?
My mind is now blown.
I don't get it.
It's a new revelation here on
Now, by all accounts, he's a super, super freaking nice guy and a great guy. And I am tiptoeing around the fact that he died. But he's a really nice guy. But that doesn't mean this is good or he's good in it. It's not. It's not good. And I can buy him in a dude role, but not when it's like, hey, you got to go back in time and save the world in France. And
let me ask this question, and not trying to offend anyone who might really love Paul Walker. Like, I genuinely want to know: did he ever make a great movie? Did he ever do something?
Fast and the Furious is definitely
no.
isn't there there's something he is in that just came out that he died either right before it premiered? Let's see if I can find it. Paunch? No. Is it Hours?
Paunch. He was Paunch.
No, he wasn't
the remake
Paunch.
Of Chips. Oh, that's perfect.
I think it's this Hours movie.
I think it is the Hours. Looking at, yeah, not the Hours, but.
And the movie didn't do well generally, but everyone always had nice things to say about his performance. Right. Let's see. Dramatic something.
It's a Hurricane Katrina movie, right?
It says Paul Walker had a magnificent performance in the role of a father that struggles to keep his baby alive during the tragedy. During the Hurricane Katrina thing. Mm-hmm. It says there's a bunch of other problems with it. But and I've heard this multiple sources that Paul Walker actually really pulled out a nice performance. So, you know, maybe in the right material, the right people, the right prodding, the right whatever. Or maybe he was just about to embark on a part of his career that would have pulled this out of him and broadened his horizons and gotten him out of a fast car that was also furious. That would be great.
This car's so angry.
Taken too soon, man. That's how this stuff goes.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, I do recognize that he was, you know, he had that young guy series of movies. Like, he was in Varsity Blues and She's All That and The Skulls, and that gave way to him being in all these action movies. And so maybe down the line there was something coming for Paul Walker, but he really didn't have any great performances yet.
He was 40. 40?
40.
Yeah, 40 years old. Yeah. I just feel like that's a turning point for a lot of actors. Not always, but potentially they can find new footing. I don't know. It sucks. It sucks that he died.
We'll never know.
But he's not good in this.
Unless they're Jennifer Aniston. She will be 70 years old and making the exact same movie she did when she was 30. It's going to be so weird to see.
And looking roughly the same. Mm-hmm. There'll be a little bit of cognitive dissonance there, though. You'll be like, something's wrong. Something's going on there. And her breath still smells like milk. All right, moving on. Some more stuff. Richard Donner had previously been one of the four directors bidding to direct the adaptation of Jurassic Park in 93 before Crichton chose Spielberg. Gee, I wonder how that went. You got a list of directors. Right. One of them really wants to do it, and his name is Steven Spielberg. Who are you going to pick?
Do we even look at the other names on the list?
Right.
You have to go into a meeting and answer the question, why you instead of Spielberg? That's the interesting thing. What do you say, Scott?
Yeah. What do you say? I say, give me Senior Spielbergo and walk out of the room is what I say. I don't want anybody else. David Thewlis, who played Professor Lupin in the third Harry Potter movie, and Onward, he played all of them, or was in all of those. Mm-hmm. He met his partner, Anna Friel. We know her. She's the...
From Pushing Daisies.
Mm-hmm.
The dead girl.
The dead girl, right. Oh, that's adorable. Who she is. She's cute as a button.
She is.
She's really cute in this. During production of this film, and actually, she's pretty good. She acts. Like, she's actually acting. Oh, yeah. It's nice. Yeah. They have been partners ever since. I assume this just, when they say partners, I don't think they're running like a cockfighting business. I think they're together.
Co-managing a Starbucks franchise. Right,
exactly. they've been partners ever since. They are the second couple to have met on the set of a Crichton adaptation, the first being Laura Dern and Jeff Goldblum, when Laura Dern yelled to herself, "Run," only to find Samuel L. Jackson's arm hanging in a fence. And I don't remember the rest. Anyway, that's how that went. So that's an interesting little note. He's a what do you call it? Who's a matchmaker? Is who?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Sure.
And that's all the trivia I had about that. Okay.
You just reminded me.
The witch?
Did I catch the iPod in there?
No, there's an iPod.
A 10-year-old iPod that was that she was listening to.
Yeah. On in the Francis current times.
First gen.
Who was?
Frances O'Connor was in the hole.
Oh.
When she was digging, she had like the white iPod with the rolly desk, spinny desk.
Oh, nice, dude. Like second or third gen. That's great.
Yeah. And she reaches to it and actually makes the spin motion on it to stop, to do something. I don't know what. Like, why is she
cranking it up?
Why not just take your headphones off while you're talking?
As it reminds me, I said this last week, but I just saw that Jack Ryan movie and they had different kinds of phones. Nokia clearly had some big deal for this movie because they're all over everything. And they had their Windows phone constantly being used in close-up shots of it and everything. But the girl, I forgot her name already, Pirates of the Caribbean. What's her name?
Keira Knightley.
Keira Knightley. We did this again in the last show. She's got an iPhone, clearly an iPhone 5S or beyond, or 5 and beyond. Mm-hmm. It's white. It's got the metal ring. Everything's the same. CGI deleted the logo off the back.
Really?
Oh, really?
Sure, yep. Sure.
And when she hung up, it made a boop sound.
Don't you love it when they take the apples off the back of MacBooks?
Yeah, it's great.
You're like, that's a MacBook. I can tell.
Look at that naked metal. What is that? That's not totally a MacBook. Right. It's funny because the ones where they leave them in, I get irritated that there's so much product placement. And then when they take them out, I'm irritated that they're taking it out.
It's the ones where they put a globe logo sticker over the apple.
Yeah, that one's always. It's always a globe.
It is.
No one could put just like a straight up sticker, but this one had been like CGI'd out of there. Like you could see it was just digitally removed. Funny. Yeah, it was cool.
I've been wanting to ask you, Scott Johnson, and you brought it up last week. So now we have this movie has come up twice in a row. Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit. Yeah. Must see, but only if you can see it at the movies. What's your deal?
Must wait and watch it on Netflix or DVD or Blu-ray. I don't think it's a rush out and see it in a movie theater. It's okay. I said on TMS today, it is an okay experience and it's fun and I had a good time. But honestly, it has kind of some of the same issues this movie does where like one of the things that really bugged me and it's kind of tropey also, but these people running around a room frantically talking about stuff, technical things, as if that all makes it more legit. That happens in a big sequence on a plane in this movie where they're all Scooby-Dooing their way to the answer.
Do they compare anything to a fax machine?
No, they don't. Yeah. There's no comparisons like that. But
was that the big technology in 2003? What would make them decide to compare this to a fax machine?
I don't know.
Not even close. I think they mentioned it one time in the book. I think he compared it. Well, he's off center like a fax machine, and that was it in the book, and then the rest of the whole movie.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Even in 03. I mean, I remember in 03, you know, you still could faxes. Some banks were like, well, it's the only way we can do it or whatever. Nowadays, I mean, I went to a Kinko's the other day, and I noticed in the corner they had a little sign, but the sign was all yellow, and it said faxes, $1 both ways or something. And there's this fax machine that looked like Mad Max found it in the corner of a burned out shed somewhere, like this dusty, ratty old thing. And it occurred to me, I think we're done with those finally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're finally rid of it.
It's like a beeper, 3D like beeper.
Yeah. It's like a beeper with paper made stuff or something.
I was in Canada trying to sell a house 4 years ago and I had no choice but to join eFax.
Oh,
and I so regret it. That was the biggest scam ever. And it was
eFaxes today.
it was practically impossible to get unsubscribed from that expensive, overly way expensive service.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad to say that Fax died 4 years ago. I'm so happy about that.
I just feel like in 03, you still had remnants of some, you know, fairly common that you still had to have dial up in some where you lived in some places.
Right.
So I think the fax thing was still a thing, but I don't think it was a big enough thing to answer Ibbot's point that this movie needed to have that be its big analogy.
No.
You know, I mean, how about just the internet?
So dated. Yeah.
How about just data to data or how about how about not even insulting my intelligence at all? And just, I get it. It's a time machine that sends you from one place to the other.
Oh, is this like a DeLorean?
And of course,
it's like a three-dimensional DeLorean.
In writing the story, Crichton figured out that we were going to ask the question, why not just send a couple people first? And then if they pop right back because there's danger, then we'll know to not have to send everybody. And so he decided to add this other risk where every time you go, there's these transcription errors that damage you. Right. And eventually, when you make the trip, the transcription errors will add up and kill you.
Like a fax machine. If you fax a piece of paper enough times. Yeah.
It's like faxing a copy of a fax.
Yeah.
But my problem is there's billions of people in this world right now. We don't have to just keep sending the same dude back over and over and over. We've got a plethora of dudes we could send.
Yeah.
You've been once, you're out. Get out of here.
Get out of here, buddy. Yeah. We've already sent Neil McDonough over there with his puke stick. We're done with him. No more of that guy. Oh, my gosh. He's so good in Justified. If you haven't watched Justified Season 3, man.
Oh, God. Yeah, he's great.
He is so good in that. Okay. Let's see what else we got here. I got a couple more things. I like the idea of a grenade blowing up your entry point, even though it's tropey and dumb. I kind of enjoyed. Like, there was a part of me that went, yeah, dude, that's so stupid. That's great. Let's blow it up.
All the weapons to bring back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He brings back a grenade.
Let's see. Oh, I didn't like the Gerard Butler mini side story, the love interest stuff.
That was my favorite part of the movie.
It was so unbelievable. He goes back in time and instantly falls in love to the point where he will risk damaging the timeline.
He was in love with history. He was a romantic. He wanted to be part of that.
You were so into it, man.
Yeah, that part that storyline was the only redeemable part of this whole stupid ass movie.
Okay, but it was ludicrous. What are the odds of this happening? And then later, he is the one guy who happens to be excavating himself.
Yeah,
right. What is the odds of finding a wormhole by putting a bunch of mirrors in a circle?
Exactly. Yeah. But see, that's the thing, Brian. You can only have too many unlikely things in a movie before. I'm okay with unlikely things, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like,
right.
How unlikely is it that Owen Wilson would ever get the girl? But when you start giving me all these other unlikely things.
That's a great universal unlikely, by the way.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's it. I'm stopping listening to this film sack program.
Film sack. Feeling depressed.
I'm going to go gamble.
But this is where it also breaks for me. He excavates himself. That other thing I said is not right.
Right. But that was the point of the movie.
Sucks. That sucks because now you're back in time where you are physically now in another time. And I hate time travel.
There's a couple of things about time travel. First of all, you got two that you need to focus on. Two things that are different about time travel. Either you're running along at the same time, like parallel to the timeline. That's the reason why you have to go, okay, we have 26 minutes or 26 hours, whatever they said. Okay, well, we have to do it within that time frame because the time is moving at the same time. So it's a moving timeline.
Right.
Okay. And so you got to figure that part out.
Two cars driving alongside each other, basically.
Right. Right. Yeah. Got to figure that part out, whether that's going to work or not. Uh-huh. And then you got to, then you also have the idea of, well, everything is fated. You were going to go back in time regardless because that was going to happen. No matter what you do, that was going to happen.
Okay.
So it's this point to point kind of timeline.
It's all bullshit is what you're saying.
It's a bunch of crap, but there's precedent for it.
Is there?
Yeah, in the story.
I thought you meant in real
storytelling.
Life.
No, in storytelling, there's a precedent for both of those.
Well, sure. You hear them all. You see different types. I mean, Star Trek plays with both of those in interesting and weird ways. I'm more of a fan of alternate universe kind of messing around and getting back and forth between those. Because then it's like, Spock's got a goatee over here and everyone's pissed. Yeah, so
you got a million. Right. No one can trap you on anything then if you say.
Right, exactly. You time travel to another decision tree.
you know, stemming off of the same branch. You can't discover what's-his-face's glasses and then send him back in time to leave his glasses, because in your timeline, he hasn't gone yet.
Yeah.
Right.
But by sending him back, oh, he leaves his glasses. Now you've created another branch future.
Yeah. And this movie is determined that there is only one.
Branch. Yeah. Exactly. There's,
and that's what's called on... timeline.
Yeah.
Timelines.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah.
I don't like it. I just don't think it can be done right. I'm trying to. Okay. So let's go around the horn and just quickly say a movie where we think time travel was done well. Maybe not perfectly, but well. So, Brian, what do you, Dunaway, start?
Back to the Future.
Okay.
I mean, no brainer.
Lots of holes in that, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But they're also entertaining. You don't care.
Well, I agree, but I'm not looking for most entertaining. I'm saying, what is the most believable time travel movie you've seen?
None of them. There's no such thing as a believable time.
I have one.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do
What's yours, Brian?
Brick.
Brick.
Brick?
No, not Brick. You're thinking of
what's the one? That was the indie one?
Right. It was the two dudes in the white shirts that got sicker the more they
Bill
went.
Bill and Ted.
No,
that's my answer. Bill and Ted.
It was my same pick, I just forgot the name.
Oh, should let you go first.
Damn it! Oh, it's the only one where I ever really bought it.
It's not Looper. It's like I'm looking it up right now. I'm like quickly trying to find it.
Yeah, indie. Hold on.
Looper is fun. I'll give him that because
Free Jack.
Not Free Jack.
Free Jack. Awesome.
Primer. It's Primer.
Primer. That's it. Yes. Primer. Primer that's right. Brick was the one with Joseph Gordon-Levitt,
the film
noir thing. Yeah.
Which is
Primer.
Also really, really good, by the way. Yeah. Primer's great. Primer is definitely one of those movies where they thought real long and hard about what this would mean and how it would work. And it's viable and believable. But I actually think I'd put Looper in the same list, maybe further down. And I know, Brian, you had a lot of nitpicking.
I had a problem with that. Yeah.
But I didn't mind it. In fact, I didn't find myself nitpicking, which I think is a sign of a good, strong movie.
Basically any time travel movie where something disappears in real time based on your choices in real time, like by me not killing so-and-so or killing so-and-so, this thing now disappears. Because there's all these other paradoxes that are caused by that. Mm-hmm. It's the whole going back in time and shooting your grandfather thing.
That's why there's only ever been one great example of time travel. Right. And I've got it.
Give it. What is it? I can't wait to hear this.
Freaking Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Because Hermione Granger has a device that lets her go back and be in the previous hour again. And it doesn't actually change anything. It just gives her a second access to the previous hour. And so there's for some hours of the day, there's two Hermione Grangers. She's in one class and at the other. And sometimes
Randy's coattails and agree.
Like it's so elegant the way that time travel is handled by J.K. Rowling.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought. Elegant that I didn't think of it as a time travel device. I know it is, but I didn't think of it. But I didn't think of it that way. I thought of it more. I don't know what I thought. I thought of it more.
There's even a little thing, and I don't remember if it's in the movie, but I know it's in the book, where she kind of sees herself and says to somebody, "Oh, I gotta go with this other direction."
Yeah. That little quick overlap is an interesting idea.
Yeah, but if she has the ability to change her own future based on this, then it falls apart because you can't.
Right.
You can only affect a different timeline.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just this concept is just that for the last hour, could be the last hour of every hour of the day, right?
Yeah.
But there's two Hermiones or whoever's wielding the time turner.
I like that you guys, that nobody said Kirk flying around the sun real fast in a
oh my
frame.
God.
Or Time Cop, when you touch Ron Silver, he turns into a bowl of gelatinous.
Well, if we're talking about one of the most entertaining tropes in sci-fi.
I'll give it to you, though. Star Trek doesn't dabble in the ridiculous. Mm. Like, Star Trek tries to stay hard sci-fi and say, oh, the Borg just went back in time.
Yeah.
Because suddenly what we're looking at is all Borg. So now we got to go back in time and chase them and stop that.
Yeah.
Like,
and
it's
fun. It's fun. Like, no one can ever accuse that stuff of not being exciting and fun. But I do think they have a problem in the Star Trek universe with saying, all right, we're making another movie and time travel will be part of this damn idea. I think they need to move away from that. They keep doing it. And hell, right now the reboot of Star Trek is on an alternate timeline.
It is.
It's not even on a timeline that the whole basis of the reboot is time travel. And
you know, it's
sick of
it. It seemed awesome in the first one because it was like, oh, this is totally fresh, new. it explains so much, and we're going to have fun with it, and we're going to get to go back and see, you know, Spock and Kirk do their whole story all over again. But now, yeah, it's starting to get a little bit
old. And in this movie, the problem wasn't even any of those things. It was just too much running around doing nothing. I feel like they shot so many action scenes, and when they got to the editing room, Donner's like, this is a stupid movie. Can we just do a lot of action?
Yeah, and you painted yourself into a time corner.
Yeah, well, yeah, but then so it was just all right. Lots of people running around, screaming, yelling trebuchet at the top of their lungs.
Trebuchet, trebuchet.
That was the last half hour of this movie.
Prepare the night arrows.
And it got sewn up way too fast, and they got into it way too quick. Like at the top of the movie was like, we're digging up stuff and we're all cool because we're Indiana Jones and we like to dig up stuff. Here's a big time machine, and they go. There's no interstitial. There's no like lead up. There's no, everybody's in. They're just in the machine and off on their way. It's, I don't like being shoved into my movie like that. And I feel like they didn't take any time to set anything up
or
set it up.
What else do, what other professions do we glamorize over the top that just are not glamorous? I mean, because these scientist people, please.
Oh, I have a friend.
I think everything is glamorous.
But tell me,
DJs.
But it did, right.
But tell me, you just groaned when suddenly there was an archaeological emergency and these guys had to go down a well really, really fast. Because you were thinking, oh, there's someone trapped, right? They got to go save. No, it was just there's fresh air getting in really fast and they got to go. Yeah. Oh my god,
yeah, that was real bad. All that stuff, what a waste of time.
One actor that we haven't talked about, I don't think, is Michael Sheen.
Oh yeah, Sheehan, or is it Sheen or I was Sheen. Forget. He's the sex guy from HBO,
right? He's Masters and Johnson.
And he's the head vampire in the Twilight movies.
He plays anytime you need somebody to play Tony Blair, he's your man.
He's your man in Love Frost Actually. Nixon. Or Frost Nixon, right. That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Frost Nixon, he was Frost.
Frost.
He's a very compelling, interesting actor.
He really is. Yeah. I like him in everything I see him, and he's just really,
really good.
He's kind of a dick.
Really good in The Queen. Really, really good in that Queen movie. I don't think he's a dick. I think he's great. I just in this,
well, no,
he's
absolutely,
just,
but he plays a good one.
I like that he's. I like that this is one of those guys
in this movie plays a dick. Yeah.
I like that he shows up in really, like really serious, like cerebral acting jobs, and then the very next week he's in Twilight. I like a guy who doesn't care. It's just whatever, man. I'll do a good job where I go, and he did fine in here. But man, the French were sure looking good in this one compared to the damn British. Jeez,
oh yeah,
they were like the Empire. Yeah.
I was bummed by the whole Anna Friel and Gerard Butler romance thing because it's like this trope of you have single male, single female. He's Scottish. She's French. Mm. There's no way in this time that they would have anything to do with each other. She would have probably killed him when she first saw him.
Yeah.
But no, they're going to fall in love and you just know they are. And I'm not a cynic. It's just like, oh, like it was obvious. I wanted a surprise, but there wasn't any.
There was. It was all
nice to meet you, Miss of Arc.
Yeah.
Also, too often with Gerard Butler, I was hearing the voice of the Viking chief from How to Train Your Dragon, which drove me crazy.
Oh yeah, because he's the dad, isn't he? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he is. Craig Ferguson's in that too. He plays that legless trainer guy. He's great.
I love him.
Such a great
movie. Oh my gosh.
I love that movie. I'm looking forward to that sequel. All right.
So glad it's coming.
Let's get some damn clips. These are clips from the film, and I don't have a ton because things got real dumb after not much time. But here's your 300 man.
So the fortress of Leroux fell in one night because of the death.
Because of the death. I could listen to him talk a lot. I like his voice.
Yeah.
Here's your Easter egg.
Does his mouth move funny to you guys?
A little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ask Katherine Heigl. She knows. I don't know what that means. Hated Easter egg. This is the Easter egg conversation in total. I only gave you a piece before, so here you go. Oops.
This from a boy who hated Easter because he had to find the eggs.
Yeah, because you buried the eggs.
That's beside the point.
I don't think we put enough emphasis in American English language, like on eggs.
Eggs.
Yeah, because you buried the
really
eggs.
I like Billy Connolly, though.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's beside the point.
He could say anything, and I'd listen to him.
Yeah.
but not this.
Yeah, because you buried the eggs.
Oh, Lord.
Wow.
I'm sorry, it's just, Paul Walker, wherever you are. I'm sorry.
It's just weird. Like, you want to make jokes.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to speak ill of the dead, but you want to make jokes. What were Paul Walker's last words? Unintelligible.
Yeah. You don't want to be haunted by it, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to be haunted by Paul Walker.
No, you don't. Okay, here's romantic warrior crap.
Men had honor, you know?
You see, you know what that is to me?
What?
It's just more of that romantic warrior crap.
He's such a dude bro in this.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some suspense.
Your father wrote that note, but he wrote it 600 years ago.
What you're saying is...
I'd shoot myself, and I worked in a computer lab where all the machines...
I really like Ethan Embry,
yeah.
But man, they rushed through this development part of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor friend's Francois, too. You saw him immediately went, red shirt.
That's right. By the way, he's the son of Donald Sutherland. He's Kiefer Sutherland's half-brother.
He's a Kiefer's brother?
Half-brother, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Kiefer Sutherland.
So Francois is Canadian. That makes sense.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Rossif Sutherland.
Kiefer Sutherland. There you go. Yeah.
But he was born in Vancouver, so that's almost French.
No, it's as far away from French as you could be.
That's
in Canada.
Right. He's the opposite coast. Yeah,
that's
all right.
Interesting. I wouldn't have ever guessed that's who that was. I saw the Sutherland name, but didn't put two and two together.
Yeah.
All right. Here's some. What's this right here? Hold on. Whoops.
So, what does that mean?
Oh, is it more?
So, what does that mean?
So, what does that mean?
I'm sorry, Paul.
That
really
is
am.
Just. That's the whole movie for me, actually.
Right.
Here's a reference to Brian Dunaway's intro today, right here.
Do we look like quantum wormhole specialists?
No.
Yes, actually. You are exactly what I would expect a quantum wormhole specialist to look like.
The actual title?
The very definition of quantum wormhole specialist. There's a picture of you.
You know, the right? QWS. The QWS.
Google image searched you, and that's what's in there.
Here's McDonough dropping the dude.
Look, dude, we have a limited time. I had to come back, and we'd both be stuck.
Look, dude, I like that.
Dude,
look, dude.
Let me pierce you with my bright blue eyes.
Oh, his eyes. What is up with those eyes?
I know, man.
Man. All right.
Oh, you just get lost in him.
He's like a good looking. He's like a really good looking.
Ian Ziering.
Jim Gaffigan.
Ian Ziering's better. Ian Ziering's more.
Oh yeah,
he looks like Ian Ziering.
But
yeah.
It's that class of like Scandinavian skin and hair, and I don't know, all
that
those guys are
white hair, man. Like almost like, oh, you had blonde hair like the rest of us, but you whitened it. You made it bright white.
Yeah.
I don't think that's for real. I don't think it's normal.
Here's the best angry acting moment in the film.
It's obviously not going
to
happen.
Let's not jump to
this.
Conclusions, Kramer.
But you can't leave seven people stuck back there. Just tell me you have a
backup
plan.
Okay, I want you to play the beginning of that again and imagine it's Jesse Pinkman talking.
All right.
And he ends his first sentence with the word bitch.
Okay.
Check it out.
Okay, here we go. Hold on.
Shit.
Oh, wrong one. Hold on. There it is. Okay.
It's obviously not going
to
happen.
Let's not jump to conclusions, Kramer.
But you can't leave seven people stuck back there.
Stuck.
Back there, just like you said, bitch, though. I caught that.
It did sound like that.
That's funny.
Did you guys have like a $1 million baby thing there for a second? Where y'all was like, oh no, Kramer fell down. He hit his head. He's dead.
No, I thought.
Oh, yeah. And I was like, we were going to see blood ooze from the back of it slowly. Like,
right.
So the David Thewlis guy, the dude from Harry Potter, was he trying to do an American accent? Did I get that?
Yes. Right? Oh, okay. It was horrible.
It was pretty bad. Yeah.
Please tell me you captured anything.
Just that where he was yelling, I think. Well, maybe more. Let's find out. Here's Michael Sheen. Gene.
You've come to kill us all in our beds, eh?
Yeah, it's great.
But David Thewlis's trying to do American was almost as bad as Daniel Craig in Tomb Raider.
Mm. Yeah, that was pretty
bad.
That was pretty bad.
This was pretty bad.
Maybe the worst we've seen. And I will give Keira Knightley props for that new Jack Ryan movie. She is very convincingly an American voice. She's not fake. She doesn't seem to be faking it very, very hard. Great death sound. Here you go.
Don't say a word.
Traitor!
Traitor! All right. Here's Puke Stick talking fast, like a FedEx commercial from the 80s. Here you go.
I'm not going without Merrick.
I don't give a shit about Merrick. My job was to get the professor. I got the professor. I can't keep taking care of these people. I lost Gomez, Barreto. You guys are on your own, all right? Or you follow me. Let's go.
Wow. It's a mouthful.
Reminds me of that haircut clip you've been playing on TMS. You could cut this. You could cut the Flo-B link, guy. Whatever you want.
Yeah, the Flo-B guy. You know what would be fun? For people that don't listen to that show, you might want to hear this. This is pretty good. Hold on. Flo-B, Flo-B, Flo-B. Well, it's not as simple as I thought it would be to find the Flo-B clip. Come on, Scott. How long have you been doing this? Here we go. Flo-B, talking fast.
This is how I trim myself around the ears. You might do yours a little differently. It doesn't matter. You might want it to hang over. It doesn't matter. It's whatever you like, you can get with the Flo-B.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
He uses doesn't matter as punctuation.
That guy is great. That guy is great. Okay. Bad acting time. And by the way, Gomez and Shuler, or whatever the other guy's name was, those are great army buddy names.
Shuler.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you have two Marines, and especially if one of them is female, they're Gomez and Shuler.
One of them has to be Gomez. All right, here you go. Bad acting. Here's a little bad acting.
I can take care of myself.
Yes, that's obvious.
What? Oh, that was a sex joke.
Okay, great. And then Scott Fletcher said this, I think, somewhere.
There's one.
Wait, that's in the top of the show. Here's this one.
My God, it's a miracle. A quiet Frenchman.
I'm going to send that to Patrick just to give him a little crap. And then finally.
What's the matter, you chicken dick?
Oh, that's from last week. Okay.
Oh! I thought I said I don't remember no chicken dick jokes in this one.
I know, right?
Time House.
I wish there was. Time House. Time Welcome House. To Time House. It's time for checklists. The Film Sack Checklist, all you need is a Ziploc bag and your priceless unearthed treasure will forever be protected from all harm. Check.
Check.
Most broken time travel conceits in 90 minutes. Check. And finally, turn off the sound and you're watching a LARPing documentary. Check.
A LARPing documentary. What was the LARPing documentary?
Twitter post.
Was it?
What was the LARPing documentary?
It was called, I forgot. There's a couple of them, but there's one.
No, but it was about like the name of it was the same as the name of their kingdom.
Yeah, like Dragon.
You're talking about the one that they shot in Utah.
No. That's the film. That's a dramatic movie. And that one's really funny. Not that. It's an actual documentary, and they're all. It's a sad. I found that documentary to be really sad because I know some LARPers, and they are not like these guys. Those guys did not give LARPing a good name.
They're nothing like those guys. I was at the park not that long ago, and there were some LARPers out there. And the entire discussion,
Darkon, that's it.
Right. The entire discussions they were having while I was sitting there was about, I can't say those words, piercings in your genital areas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can say those words.
Right. Well, I can say those words. I was going to use the words they used.
Well, what did they, I'm curious, use the initials of what words they use. What'd they say?
The Prince Albert?
C ring.
Okay.
All right.
Either one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Moving on.
All right. Well, good for the LARPers. Is that part of the role play sitting around talking about your getting your dingle pierced?
I'm pretty sure they were drunk.
That's funny.
Speaking of metal in your drunk in your junk.
Yeah, you're drunk.
metal in your junk.
Star Trek has some connections here. There are only two of them though. Steven Liska, he's the ITC tech. In Star Trek 3, played the the Klingon Torg, or the Klinglong. Jeez.
Did the ITC were like cops? Did that annoy y'all a little bit too?
A little, yeah.
Like they carry some kind of special something?
That whole organization, because we have no background on it, it all came off as just really stupid and out of the purview of anyone, of law enforcement. You know, it's another one of those like, oh, let's trap you in this second reality where these things go on and nobody knows. I can't buy that stuff. It just always kills me. Let's see. Neil McDonough, Pukestick. He was Frank Gordon in First Contact, played Lieutenant Hawk on the USS Enterprise E. He was a helmsman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Forgot about that. So there he was doing that. Soundtrack great. I give it an NES for needlessly epic sounding.
Oh, true story.
Over the top, man.
Not super NES.
No.
You know, I liked the soundtrack. I enjoyed it very much. Yeah. I was okay with it. I actually like, there were a couple of points in the movie where my whole body language was affected by it. Like I kind of like perked up. Like
you hit a brown note and you took a shit?
No. But okay. It's like, oh, this is, wow, we're about to, you know, King Arthur and his knights are about to come riding through here slowly.
Mm.
You know, that sort of thing. I don't think that's needless. It just didn't match the shit of the film.
Yeah. If I had, you know what, this reminds me of something. If I had the wherewithal to do this and I thought I could get away with it and I could get a arena full of about, say, 10,000 people and I could get up on a microphone and say to them, Like, this would be a Jim Carrey thing, or somebody could do this. I don't know. More of it. Maybe it's more of a Kaufman kind of thing. But tell them all that you have figured out how to hit a brown note, and you're going to hit it in the stadium to prove it, and everybody in there is going to hear it. That would be... I wonder what the psychology of that would be.
What kind of freaky dream is this?
Well, just imagine everybody in that audience going, wait, is he really going to do this? Do you think he really knows how to? Because I just ate three chili dogs. This is bad.
Right.
Like, I just think that would be a hoot to kind of study that reactions.
So, yeah. Like, people who are, like, terminally constipated would come and
yeah,
the hopes
they'd be like,
that
yeah,
you would
I'm
help
going,
them.
Man. He's hitting a brown note tonight.
For some reason, people in large groups get really stupid, and I think what would probably happen is people would cheer and scream and yell.
I think they'd poo their pants anyway, even if he didn't actually hit the brown note. Anyway, sorry for the excursion. I want to get now to our Twitter post. This is 140 characters or less. You guys sum the film up for what it truly is. Let's start with Randy.
Timeline. Do not speak ill of the dead. 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 I'm out.
Wow. Pretty much.
I think you nailed it. All right. What you buried the
eggs. Yeah, because you buried the eggs.
All right, great. Let's get to Brian Dunaway.
Timeline. If you like movies that involve fax machines and time travel, doesn't matter. This is the movie for you. Doesn't matter.
Nicely done.
Do that in like 8-point type below your other part. Right. That's great. Then finally, Brian Ibbett.
Timeline, a documentary about the popular dinner and tournament franchise Medieval Times. Can I get a refill on my Diet Coke?
True. Well, I can't get in a Medieval Times vibe.
They only have Pepsi products at Medieval Times. Really? Pepsi. Is Pepsi okay?
Oh, wow. Do they really? Why would that be?
It's a joke.
Is that a one place, by the way? There are no multiple locations.
Oh, there's several.
No, they're all over franchise. The place. Yeah. Yeah. Orlando, Texas, Irving, Texas, where the franchise is based out of.
Yeah. But they only the Irvine one does the wow stuff occasionally, right? Or whatever.
The one in Buena Park near Knott's Berry Farm.
Oh.
It's right across the street from Knott's Berry
Farm. Knott's Berry Farm. What?
You can get some jelly on your way home. Here's your alternate title just handed to me. This is just in. Everything Seems to Happen on the Roof is title number one.
Yeah.
And title number possible two. I can't believe we're supposed to root for the French. And there's your possible titles. All right, here we go. Email from Dave. Dave wrote in. Says, hi, I'm Dave.
Hey, Dave.
I just got around to listening to this evening, and you got me with the very quiet There Are Four Lovers comment about halfway through the episode after Crusher leaves. I cried. Golf clap, sir. Golf clap. Thanks, Dave. Aww, I think that was you, sure. Ibbett. Wasn't that you?
I think so, yeah.
So fun with that one.
I'll take credit for it, even if it wasn't me, because right. I... Sounds like something I'd do.
We get asked a lot to do more of these Star Trek things, and I'm pleased to say that we'll likely do more of them. So watch for more of those coming up this year. Bjorn from Norway. Yeah. Not the famous one that hit tennis balls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Mutant Chronicles is a movie we should be watching. Director Simon Huntlett. The movie was made to be sacked. Does anyone know what is going on with The Mutant Chronicles? Is that a familiar name to anybody here?
Yeah. I've heard... the name.
Well, I'm looking it up right now. Mutant Chronicles, IMDb, 5.3 out of 10.
Loosely based on the role-playing game of the same name.
2008, so it's relatively new.
Stars Thomas Jane and Ron Perlman.
I'm in.
I am so there.
That sounds
great. Can we watch this in a theater?
John Malkovich is in it?
2008.
John Malkovich?
Wow. Yeah.
Hold on.
I'm on their website too. You can go to mutantchroniclesthemovie.com. They still have the
18% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Did not do well. Oh, this photo though. Here, yeah, it's in the chat. That photo is awesome. Whoops, did that go in? No, it didn't. There it is.
That's great. Like
that's great.
That's the Perlman I want.
You hit the eggs. Yeah.
That's great. All right, so we'll consider it. Bjorn, if that is truly your real name, from Norway. Aren't all people from Norway, or all Bjorns are from Norway, right? Or can they be Swedish or Swiss?
Sure they can be from
I don't know.
And is it racist to even talk about
across,
it?
Across the Nordic countries, everyone's named Christian.
All right, fine. Fair enough. Our next film.
I want to thank Scott for sending the Skype equivalent of the brown note.
Oh, what happened?
It shut down my Skype.
Oh, it did?
I missed everything for the last minute because it was a relaunch. Whatever you said.
That's weird. It's just an IMDb photo link.
I know. But as soon as it, you're like, click, it appears, and then you say something like, oh, did this go in? And then, joink, Skype is done.
Oh, what the heck?
Goodbye.
Is this streaming is the question. I don't see it.
You know, this has a Too Fast, Too Furious connection.
What's that?
Devin Aoki from Too Fast, Too Furious, I guess Ludacris's girl.
Oh.
Did you guys see, you know what I'm talking about?
She's got a weird IMDb photo.
She's got a unique face. And
I like these. My favorite IMDb photo is nothing to do with the movie we're talking about today, but it's Luis Echegaray from that movie we just talked about, where he will only show a nostril and one eye. So there you go. that's great.
It's a bad crop, people.
What the hell is our next movie? I don't even know. What are we doing? Randy, do you have the list,
Andy? I forget.
I'm going to look real quick. Hold on.
Sorry.
Oh, it's fine. I got it right here. So our next film, we've moved things around a lot, so it makes sense. The Angry Red Planet.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
And then why?
Dream. Me and Randy are like, yeah, right.
Dreamscape's after that, but didn't we do Dreamscape? Do I remember?
No, we did
Dreamscape.
The one with Dennis Quaid, right?
Yeah, we did Dreamscape then. Yeah,
isn't that Dreamscape? Hold on. We're looking it up. Dreamscape 84. Yeah, no, we've seen Dreamscape.
It's with the
it's the Dennis
Lizard Leary, Monster.
Or Dennis Leary. Mm-hmm, Dennis Quaid. Yeah, it's the lizard. We've seen Dreamscape, so that's not the movie after that. The movie after that will be The Last Stand. Or we'll just slip something.
The new Arnold Schwarzenegger movie with Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah. Dreamscape was so good, we'll do it twice. Jeez, that shouldn't be in there.
So we're going to watch an old movie, then a new movie.
Yeah, why not? How old is this Red Planet one? 50s?
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't done that in a while.
I haven't done that
Not since The Fly was screaming in the web at the dude going, kill me.
Angry Red Planet. Huh.
There you go. So there's what we're going to be doing. We hope you guys will be here to do it with us. That's the important part. In the meantime, please go to the website, filmsack.com. That's the website. You can follow us on Twitter, @FilmSack. Send us your emails. Love your feedback. Love to read them on the show. filmsack@gmail.com. And leave us a review on iTunes. That always makes us happy. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
None of me.
We'll see you next time.
Deep slot food, deep slot black brook.
Dude, okay. Well.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.